I am Pierce. This is Ace Meg. That's Goldie in the far corner over there. And our special guest is Sanity Bit.
You could also say my name is a smig, sort of
a
like
smig.
You're sneezing, you know?
Okay.
A smig! That works pretty well. Just saying.
So, who here uses internet? Yay! A basic overview of the technology, WiMAX is fast wireless internet. It's the 802.16 protocol, which is sort of similar to the 802.11 protocol, and it's especially interesting because it is under IEEE control. It's very different from a lot of the other mobile wireless specs that are under control of different mobile companies and things like LTE is the 4G technology that was come up with by the cell phone industry, and it's another high-speed wireless internet system. And currently with WiMAX, there is a large nationwide network being developed and deployed by Clearwire, and it is branded under the name Clear, and a lot of people have probably seen it or commercials.
Get closer to the mic.
Closer to the mic?
Yeah, light the mic.
Okay.
I can't even hear it in advance.
God damn it.
Yeah.
So.
So in the U.S., there are a couple of WiMAX networks. The largest one, however, is Clear. Founded originally as Clearwire, they provided proprietary wireless internet from Motorola called Expedience, and then later on bought up a lot of 2.5 gigahertz spectrum and started providing 802.16 WiMAX over that network. They're currently deployed in 79 markets across 21 states, and they have a very aggressive rollout plan. They're hoping to hit all major U.S. markets by the end of 2012. In the next 3 months alone, they're planning on hitting another 22 markets, including New York, Miami, San Francisco. They also just opened up in Washington, D.C., and they're really aggressively rolled out in Texas right now. There are actually a couple other services using Clear's network, and these are all investors in Clear's initial infrastructure. It's Time Warner Cable, selling it, rebranded as Roadrunner Mobile, Comcast, selling it as Comcast High Speed to Go, and Sprint, which is one of the larger investors in Clear, which is using it for their 4G service with their HTC Evo. They're all placed onto the same physical network. There's no difference on the infrastructure. As you can see in the screenshot, all of the signal are the same. It's the same tower. The only difference is what portal pages that are company-specific you get redirected to when you get on. Next slide. So this is a map. The gray stuff is a couple of the markets that they're opening. It's not showing all of them because of the Zoom coverage. They're in a lot of major markets, including Las Vegas. Okay.
So last year we discussed a couple of ways to bypass their portal page, and apparently they were listening because they kind of tried to put a little plug in it. So last year we told you that you use OpenVPN over UDP port 53, and it just blasts right through the portal page. So their fix to that problem was they blocked large UDP packets from exiting the network on port 53. The counter fix to that was we just fragmented the packets to make them a little bit smaller. It works great. You just had to add two options to your OpenVPN config file, and that's pretty much all she wrote. So, next slide. So that's an example OpenVPN config file right there. And anyone who's configured or played with OpenVPN, you already know how easy it is to get that set up, and you just got to add those two options, and you can go right through the portal page from the service providers. So.
Going into some of the hardware now, this is a picture of some Echo Peak hardware, which is WiMAX gear from Intel. The interesting stuff about this is that it works in Linux, unlike a lot of the more consumer-grade WiMAX gear. A lot of the WiMAX stuff that you buy at the store is for consumers, and these come in a lot of, I guess, some of the newer ThinkPads, and there are some companies that are selling laptops that have these built in. They're tiny PCIe cards, and you can actually buy them on eBay for about $80 now. The 5150 and the 5350 are the best supported in Linux, and you go to linuxwimax.org and you can download the network tools and all that, and the version 1.4 is what you're looking for with the current version of Ubuntu, and it actually has the firmware and the kernel drivers already installed. It just doesn't have the tools to connect to the network. If you want to use these in an actual computer, you pretty much need to buy the USB PCIe cradle, and those are about $40, so you can get them online. The PCIe cards, if you plug them into laptops, they typically don't work. The wireless part will work, because this is actually 802.11 and 802.16 on this card. The 802.11 will work fine in any computer, but the 802.16 is not... We figure that it's not powered high enough, or there's some weird issue, or it's like newer PCIe buses are required, but it hasn't worked in any of the laptops that we've tested, even though there have been some ThinkPads and stuff that we've seen that it will work on.
Good morning. Okay, cool. So I wasn't sure if anybody was actually awake this early on Sunday. This is my first time to DEF CON. No, it isn't. but I got the impression that people would be partying late last night and have a hard time rolling out of bed this morning. So anyway, again, my name is Asmig. That's you, Asmig, just like that. I'm talking about hardware hacking a little bit. I don't really know much about it. I'm just getting started, but I've had some fun with it so far. And so what we're looking at right now is the Motorola CPE 150 and 750 devices. It's also known as the home router. It's sort of like a cable modem, but no wires. It's kind of cool. It says down there, got root. And do you? Well, you could. They are running Linux. So inside, 64 megs of RAM, 32 megs of flash, has a Basim wireless chipset, kind of cool. It's a Texas Instruments TNET V1061 at 213 megahertz. Pretty awesome stuff there, very speedy. It's a MIPS 32 core, so if you want to know what your instruction set is, there it is, MIPS 32, pretty easy. The debugging is via JTAG, EJTAG in specific, and so it's all nice standard stuff, but I didn't know how to use any of that stuff, so I had to like learn from scratch. It's kind of fun, though. And yeah, it is actually running Linux. We weren't sure at first. We thought it was probably Linux, but, you know, didn't see any source floating around, so weren't sure until we pulled some firmware dumps. So when you're looking at a device like those, there they are, what do you do to figure out what it's actually running? I mean, does anybody have any thoughts?
Take it apart.
Take it apart, exactly. And then what?
Burn it.
Burn it. Yeah? Because it's crap.
It
well, okay, sure. Yeah, looking at those specs, I might say that too. You know, pull off the RAM and chuck the rest. Yeah. Any other thoughts?
Serial console.
Serial console. Good. Where do you find it, though?
OScope.
OScope. Yeah, I wish I knew how to use one of those. That'd be cool. So here's my trick. This is a Logic probe, and it's kind of like my little magic wand. I'd be waving it around right now, except that I left it in my hotel room. Sorry. It's pretty cool. I mean, all you have to do is you find the negative, you find the positive, and you clip those little leads, the color-coded ones, you know, the red one for positive, the black one for negative. Really complicated stuff. Like, took me ages to figure that one out. And then there's the pointy bit, and you just, like, stab at the device randomly until something happens. It's like, I thought it was pretty cool. I don't know. So eventually, what I found is that if you put it on this one pad and then you plug in the device, then all of a sudden the red and green light on this thing would just light up like a Christmas tree. I was like, oh, awesome. Hey, that's doing something. And it was right next to, you know, a couple other pads. Seems like maybe that was serial. So sure enough, I found the serial port. And, you know, I was poking around a little bit more. I also labeled it processor, flash, RAM, ETH1. Yeah. Just in case.
Was the header there?
I actually had to solder the headers on myself. They are surface mount headers, so they're kind of a hassle. You've actually all seen them. If you've seen the DEF CON badge this year, which I hope you have, if you're in this room and you haven't seen the DEF CON badge, get the hell out. Anyhow, that JTAG connector is actually the exact same connector as used on the DEF CON badge this year. And the serial connector is a little bit different, but pretty close. So how do you talk to JTAG? Well, I stole this from the internet. And if alec@sensi.org is here, thank you for this fine schematic. It came in handy. I built this thing out of it. And it actually worked. Nobody else is surprised? I'm freaking surprised. Yeah. Thank you. And it gave me stuff like this. Now, I know you can't actually read that. You're not supposed to be able to read that. This is like the token slide. You know, everybody has a presentation with a slide that has so much crap in it you can't actually read it. Well, this is that one. Except that the people that are right next to the projectors might see something in the bottom two lines that looks interesting. Anybody just like shout that out? Yeah, console state locked. Well, what does that mean?
I don't know.
Well, okay. So it also has some other information in there that seems pretty handy. It talks about where the bootloader is. It talks about where the different images are, the configurations, the certificates for the device. Yeah, X509 certificate. That's pretty cool. And factory defaults, also this JFFS2. Has anybody heard of that? Yeah, cool. Well, for those of you who don't know, that's a partition where you can actually read and write data. It's pretty fancy for Flash anyway. So what about the root? Yeah. Okay, so this device, it can be rooted. I did it the worst possible way. Okay, so this way works, but it sucks. And I know that it sucks now because I've actually gotten into the device and been able to play with it. But for a first approach, you know, it got the job done. And my approach was, well, let's just jump back a couple slides. So in the bootloader, we saw that information that had the console state locked and all that stuff. And that's actually the default bootloader configuration that gets dropped into the bootloader config area. So if you take the bootloader config area and you delete it, then it reloads from the bootloader area. And you can easily modify the bootloader config default, have it regenerate a new bootloader config, and then let it boot up. But the problem is, once it boots up a little ways, then this fancy program runs. And what it does, according to the strings here, is basically it says, oh, did the console state somehow magically get set to unlocked? We don't want that. And it resets it to locked. So that's kind of a hassle. So my workaround for that was to reset it to unlocked, boot part of the way, freeze it, reset it back to locked so that it doesn't change anything, and then let it finish booting. Yeah, a little trickery, you know. I have JTAG control, so I can control the operation, and I don't really know how that stuff works, so I'm taking a poor man's approach, and hey, it got the job done. Then I found that there's some interesting stuff with this file that's being called from that previous script, and it turns out that as long as this file exists, then that previous program doesn't actually do this relocking thing, and that makes it really handy to continue having root on the device once you get it. So basically all you'd have to do is just drop in this file as soon as you've got access to the thing, and then you can reboot it and you've got complete access for as long as you want. It enables SSH, so you can SSH into it with a default user pass, which is pretty cool. And this file even gets executed. So if you have anything that you want to have run every time you boot up the device, like killing SNMPD, or changing your firewall rules, or changing passwords so that you're not using default everything for everything, it's a handy place to do that.
So once you have root, you can go ahead and enable SSH, and then you can SSH into the device with a default login of admin and password tools. It drops you into a debug command line, which you can drop out of with the type it in shell, which then drops us to a very old version of BusyBox. By exporting the path of all of the binary locations, we can see all the system binaries. There's a lot of stuff there. There's stuff to control the radio. There's some debug commands that were built in by Basim. But there's just way too much to cover here. What is interesting is that you have direct access to IP tables, and you can access the CVE tools, which allow you to directly read and write to certain parts of memory on the device, adjust radio configuration parameters, and possibly break your device if you don't know what you're doing. So be careful. So the devices have a web interface with a default password of Motorola. You just type in the password. If you look behind the scenes, though, it's just passing the username router behind this in the form. If you change that to admin tools, you log in and bypass any password protections on the web interface. And there's no changing that unless you actually have a shell on the device. So any default consumer device that hasn't been unlocked is affected by this. By default, it's not web accessible, but if anyone gets on your LAN and you've changed your password on your device, they can get right back in and change everything. This year at B-Sides, I logged in and changed the host name to my username, so when people trace routed out, they would see me and be like, who the fuck is that guy?
These are some of the clear mobile devices. The one that you see in the middle is the basic mobile USB stick. It's been out for a while. You plug it into your laptop and you get a 4G connection. It works in Windows and OS X now. It's got some people working on trying to get Linux support, but it's still kind of sketchy. The second device that you see is the 3G, 4G USB stick, and that will actually downgrade to 3G if you're in an area that doesn't have the 4G, which is nice. The next spot that you see here is, or the next device up at the top, is the clear spot. The clear spot is essentially a wireless access point, which is really neat because then you can plug in the mobile device and it will use the mobile device to get to the internet and distribute out the connection to a local wireless network so anyone can connect in. And by default, all the passwords for the ClearSpot to log on and to get into the admin interface is the last 3 bytes of the MAC address in hex form, so 6 characters. And you can just see that from the network traffic, so that's not necessarily the best default password to use if you're going to use a default password. But
haha, you have to listen to me again. So the mobile devices, not quite as exciting. Less RAM, less flash. A little bit faster processor. It's a weird one. It's a mass or massy. I'd never actually seen one of these before, but not that I've seen much. The chip debugging is a royal pain in the behind. It's not using standard JTAG. It's using SPI. Now, a lot of you are probably familiar with SPI as a method for accessing flash or RAM or other devices. But for actually doing debugging, it's kind of a strange thing. I've never seen it before. I had to read some articles to figure that one out. It's using a completely proprietary instruction set, which makes it a challenge to figure out exactly what's going on inside. And it's definitely not running Linux. So at that point, I became a lot less interested in it. But in order to figure that out, of course, you have to figure out what's in the board again. And since the JTAG interface was non-existent, and that was really frustrating for me, I didn't really know how to pull the memory out of pull the dumps out of the flash. So I got creative. And, I just gave it away. Shoot, I was going to show something else, which got, there it is, in the wrong order. Interesting. So if you look at this chip that's in the red box, and I know that you can't actually tell from where you're sitting most likely, the solder job on that chip looks really horrible. It's because I did it by hand. And basically what I did is I just pulled the flash off of the clear spot and I put it onto a different device. And I'm curious if anybody out there can recognize that device. I heard Linksys. Is it a WR54G? No, it is not. It's close, though. Oh, hand over here.
Motorola Surfboard.
Motorola Surfboard, that is correct. What model? Well, okay, cheater. Yeah, okay, so here's a closer view. Yes, it's the Surfboard 5120. And yeah, that board has MIPS 32, EJ tag, all the stuff that I'm totally familiar with, which is basically the same as on the home router. So I was able to just drop the flash on there and my tool set was already ready for me. And I was able to pull the flash off like that. So this is a mod that was done by a friend of ours, Loki, basically just putting a big antenna onto the USB stick and it works great. So there's a lot of different options as far as the mobile devices and tearing them apart and playing with them.
This is the HTC Evo. I'm very happy to have gotten mine a couple weeks ago. It is the first mobile device that has the 4G built into it, and so it uses WiMAX. It uses a Sequans chipset, so it's a bit different than anything that we've really looked at before. But when I was getting familiar with some of the Android tools, I did the whole ADB shell and poked around a bit and noticed that if you use getprop and setprop, you can list out a lot of the variables that are stored in the like environment variables sort of deal that has a lot of the configuration details for the WiMAX, which is really interesting, and it'll tell you things about the like towers that you're connected to and like MAC address and just a whole bunch of really interesting numbers. When I flash my modem using Toast's step two of the how to root your Android, I noticed that he had modified an engineering build of the Evo firmware, which is really neat because that came with a bunch of diagnostic tools for WiMAX. And I ripped those APKs out of that build and put them on the website. And so now, if you download the APKs, you can install them onto whatever version of the phone that you have. So that's kind of fancy, and it lets you see things like tower connectivity and little debug logs and all sorts of fun with that. Also, if you have a rooted phone, you can do the WiMAX tether, which essentially turns the phone into a clear spot, which is really nice. And it also has really good access controls. Yesterday, I got to play with a deactivated Evo, and I noticed that even when it has no service, you get the captive portal page. And the captive portal page can be bypassed with the same techniques that were discussed earlier, except it's on a phone, which is nice. Right now, if you want to be using WiMAX on the phone, you pretty much have to be using 2.1, which is like Android 2.1, which is the version that comes with the phone. And I've messed with Fresh and I've messed with Damage Control, and they both seem to work fine for the WiMAX. Cyanogen does not quite work yet, but CFH and the other guy are working really, really hard on getting that working. And they're trying to get it working with the Android WiMAX framework that was released from Clear about a year ago, which is neat because then it would all be open source connectivity to the drivers. And that will allow Cyanogen to continue to have the 4G in their builds from then on.
So, by show of hands, how many people here like their privacy when they're using their wireless devices of any kind? Very cool. You guys are going to be upset with this. They're running location-based services. A lot of the major telcos, wireless telcos, are getting this all ramped up, and they're trying to say that, you know, this is the next thing for social networking and that you should just let all your friends know where you're at, you know, with the phone that's in your pocket, you know, things like Google Latitude are taking advantage of that and whatnot. But with location-based services, with WiMAX, it's a little bit different. Basically, there's two types of ways you can get your location with Clear or Sprint or any of them. The first one is a client-server relationship that is done through AJAX and a web page. So you go to the web page or the URL that's listed right there, and it will bring up a pretty little Google Maps and put a dot with a circle around it of roughly the location that you're in. The second way is for direct server-to-server communication, and that's using a Parallel X API. And that allows me as a developer or the service provider to put in your IP address or MAC address, and I can just find out where you're at. No questions asked. And so basically, next. So after playing around with this a little bit, as soon as I got access to this, first thing I wanted to do is find out how accurate is this. I mean, is this something where they're going to be able to drop a missile on your head by using LBS or not? So set up a script, recorded my location, and just drove around town for hours and hours and hours. And it was actually pretty impressive driving around. Like, you maintain connectivity at 60 miles an hour going down the freeway. So I was pretty impressed by that. But I started to notice that through the Parallel X API, all the ranges I was getting seemed to be predefined. It wasn't dynamic. And all the ranges are listed right there that I saw driving around town, and there was nothing in between those numbers. So you can see the level of accuracy that the location-based services has. Now, the way they're doing this is based on the tower and the sector panel location and the orientation of that panel. They keep track of every panel. They know exactly which degree it is pointing. And then they take the power reading and basically are determining how far away or how accurate that is. However, they are working on using multiple towers to help basically triangulate where you're at and to increase the accuracy of that. It is being worked on, but there has not been an announced ETA on that. And I'm kind of curious to see how accurate that's going to be and see if the predefined ranges kind of goes out the window and it gets a little bit more accurate. So this is the part that really kind of caught my attention, was that with the location-based services, if you go sign up or you just buy hardware, you're opted in by default. And if you don't like that, tough shit. They don't let you opt out. You have to email engineering. You got to get a hold of the right people in the engineering department and say, I want my LBS turned off. Otherwise, doesn't matter if you're using Sprint, Comcast, Clear, Time Warner, someone gets your IP address, they can pop it in there and find out roughly where you're at. And another thing we noticed driving around is that there seems to be random dead spots throughout the network. And it's like you're on one tower and you drive into this area and you're gone. Like, LBS quits reporting, gives you back a service error, and you just find a dead spot. So that might be interesting if anyone's doing any fun things over WiMAX. You might want to maybe play around with that and go find a dead spot. That might be advisable. So,
right now, none of these WiMAX devices have an open source firmware, and that's definitely something that I think would be really cool to see in the future. We're also looking at trying to put something like OpenWrt on one of these home devices to actually get real control and package management on what's going on the system. Also, the future of WiMAX, the 802.16m spec provides 1 gigabit fixed bandwidth, which is pretty fast. And
I don't know how they're going to pull that off. I mean, I've looked at the spec, but I've seen it in labs, and I don't know how they're claiming they're going to get 1 gigabit a second over the airwaves. I don't buy it. I'll believe it when I see it.
If you want.
So I just posted some stuff to our Google group, which will be listed on a slide later on. Maybe it's the next one. Oh, what do you know? There it is right there. So there's the YMAX Hacking Google group. That's second from the bottom down there. And if you go to that list, you'll see the post that I just made that points to the Google Code project. And that has some code for you to play with. The APKs that Pierce mentioned earlier for your Evo, and also some stuff that I put together for using OpenOCD in order to do the JTAG with the home router device. And does anybody want to see a demo of the device getting rooted? Yeah? Because I think we have a couple of minutes, and we could probably set that up. I don't know. I mean, that seems like a medium. I mean, we could also do it in somewhere else, you know. Yeah? Okay. Okay. I heard the bring it. That sounds good. That sounds good. Is there anything else on here we need to show? Does everybody have these URLs down? I'm going to pull the plug.
They're on the disk.
They're
on the internet.
They're on the interwebs, and the disk points you to the interwebs. So it'll get you there eventually.
Just close my lid and you'll be fine.
Pardon our brief changeover.
So while he's doing that, I would like to point out that it was pretty disturbing that even through when you go to the Clear website, you're a paying customer, you log into your account, you check your account or whatever, there is no option to opt out of this LBS system. It doesn't exist. And that really kind of sucks because we would like to see a opt-out option, especially as a paying customer when we're paying for, you know, half a dozen devices. We just don't want to be tracked. That's it. No one has a right to know my location, and we just think that they should give us an option to opt out of this. Because right now, you're stuck. That's it. You buy this gear, you can be tracked. So that's something to think about. Those of you who go out and get WiMAX, and if it comes to your areas, consider emailing customer service if you can. Go to developer.clear.com, dig around. You can find some engineers that are on there, and you know, say your piece, and hopefully we can get this implemented.
And that's being tracked by anyone with a developer key.
Which, by the way, they gave me for free. Yeah. I just asked for it. They sent it back.
Can you change your MAC address?
Right now, we cannot change our MAC address.
Well, you're not supposed to, anyway. So is this supposed to just pop up there, or does somebody have to push a button somewhere?
No.
Okay. That means I'm doing it wrong.
No. Screen's doing something.
Oh.
Screen's doing something? Kidding.
There we go. Yeah, thanks.
Hey, Kenny, check screen. No, I don't think that's a console.
Hey.
So sad.
Like above, like another screen right now. Look at FN key, such to external.
It was totally there. Where'd it go? I didn't change anything. Control Z. I heard that.
It's still before noon. LBS will work if you're on the tower, if you're connected to the network. It will be able to tell roughly where you're at.
What's up?
Hey,
Hey, it's there. Oh my god.
All right. Kenny. Look at this screen. You had a console blinking. I think that one's being chopped at the top, dude. Hit enter a couple times.
I'm pressing enter.
Now it's gone again. All right, I'll keep stalling. So, yeah, right now it's a single tower and single panel antenna, and that's really the only way they're determining where you're at. Again, like I said, it's several hundred meters is generally the distance between each predefined range right now that they can determine. So it's not horribly accurate, but if I really was determined to go get you, I could use LBS to narrow down roughly where you're at and kind of go snoop around from there. Hey. I see a hand. Yeah, go ahead. Yes. Here's the caveat with that. Location-based services will tell if you're lying. So, we've noticed with Clear, because we had some friends that we all met when we all came to DEF CON. We told them, buy some gear, and they got here, and it just started working for days. I mean, they didn't register, didn't do anything. So it's kind of like they're giving you a teaser when you buy the gear. It just works for a little bit so you can get a taste of it, and then they're just like, oh, okay, pay us. So... Yeah, they do that. We've also noticed that with some of these home routers, they seem to kind of keep tabs on your home router once it's been turned on. They're like, hey, we noticed you in this area. And then if your home router like starts jumping all over the place, it quits working in some areas. So
we can do the demo in the breakout session.
It doesn't stop LBS, so. We have any luck yet? I see Blinky Cursor, maybe? Hey, we got a Blinky Cursor. That's good.
Hey.
There we go.
So what this is doing right now is basically, this is really gross. I'm kind of embarrassed by it. Actually, I'm really embarrassed by it. It took me a long time to be okay and settle in with the concept of releasing this code to the public because it's so awful. But it's effective. So I've got a shell script that's starting screen that's using OpenOCD to... load some TCL scripts because OpenOCD uses TCL as its script interpreter. Man, I haven't touched TCL in like 10 years. You guys remember egg drop bots? Anyway, different story. So these TCL code bits, they're bringing in some MIPS32 machine code and dropping it via JTAG, and that's what's actually transferring data between flash and RAM and moving things around. So I'm taking, I think it's mostly done actually. There's a nice little PS listing. And that's what's running on the box, and there's root. Takes about a minute and a half to run. Yeah. So what it did, does anybody care?
Yes.
Sort of? A little bit? I mean, because there's the mailing list, too, and there's going to be documentation there, so I don't want to bore everybody to death here.
Yep.
What the hell did it do? I don't know. I try to figure it out sometimes, but man, most of this code I wrote it like a year ago, so I've kind of forgotten. But generally, so what it's doing is it goes in and it transfers the bootloader config to a temporary area, just somewhere else in Flash where it won't get nuked, and then allows the original bootloader config to be overwritten, it actually erases it and lets a temporary one be written. I just said I'm trying not to do that. Huh, mental note, thanks.
Drink.
Have any of you spoken before at one of these conferences?
Yeah.
Show of hands, just like Yeah, there's a couple people. Okay, you feel my pain. This is my first time, so, you know.
And it's still 10 a.m., and goddamn, last night was awesome.
Not
10
a.m. It's almost 11. Shoot. What time is it, anyway?
Oh, almost there. 11.
Cool. Getting close. Well, I should get the heck out of here, then. So, the gist of the story is it shuffles a bunch of junk around, lets things get recreated, and then kind of does a little jerry-rigging and a little bit of this and a little bit of that to sneak this console state unlocked past the scripts that are checking for it and the program that automatically resets it to locked. I can page up through this stuff, but it's really boring. If you want more detail, really, I think you should just come and chat with me, because seriously, the details and the nitty-gritty and looking at the MIPS32 code is pretty gross. But the code is available for perusal at this point, and there are some comments in there that probably don't make any sense because I've been making them for the last, 8 hours or so instead of sleeping. It's good times. Good times, yeah.
And we have the breakout session in 107, I think.
107.
So
be there, be square.
If you want any more, intimate question-asking sessions or anything, then
yeah,
we'll be over there. So,
are there any questions while we're in here?
Yeah.
Any big ones? I got a question over here.
No.
Okay, so the question was that last year during the talk we announced that any two modems on the network, whether they were registered or not, could talk to each other. And so the question was, did they ever patch that? Did they do anything to it?
No, they didn't. If you have the hardware, it gives you an IP address. It's pretty much like a big, giant, nationwide wireless LAN party. I mean, if you got your friend's IP address, go nuts. Just tunnel, play video games, stream movies, do whatever the hell you want. I mean, oh, I didn't say that. Yeah, make sure you pay for service so you don't get in trouble,
Yeah.
LBS is a bitch. They will be able to come find you. It's going to be a lot different than, like, big, giant, shared, wired, cable networks like Comcast. They'll be able to track you a lot more finite than Comcast could do on their network with people who are, stealing service.
It's always very important to balance the give and take ratio. How much do you pay them versus how much do you take from them? It's very important to keep that all in mind. Also, one thing that we did mention last year, apparently, was that the ClearSpot runs Linux, and that's not true. It does not run Linux. We learned the hard way. Sorry about that. But just so you know, it's not Linux. Any other questions? Can LBS be used for mass surveillance? Ooh.
So, I think what you'd be referring to is like just drift netting, anything, everything that comes in there. I believe it could. They have two different servers. They got a development server and a production server, but both kind of give you the same results. And with the development environment, though, they're a little bit more restrictive than the production environment. The production environment's sitting on some big old servers that just kind of let you go nuts. And again, like I said, it's opt-in. You really do not have control of that. You get on the network, within a few minutes, someone could look you up on LBS, and there's not a whole lot you could do. And you could just start going through every possible MAC address or IP address in the net block and just start pulling people's locations. And you could, after several hours, probably data mine a good portion of everyone's location going through one of these networks. So
I think the short version of that is LBS scary? And the
LBS
answer,
very yes. Scary, yes.
Yes. Any other questions? Yes, sir. Does Clear tell people that they're being tracked via LBS? Is it in the contract? Has anybody seen it? I think that's the answer, really. If nobody's noticed that it's in the contract, then it's not visible enough. Whether they're actually including it or not, it's not visible enough. And that's effectively a no. Yes?
I'm not sure how that differs very much from the cell phone tracking that they do for E911 services.
It's that anyone can do it.
Like I said before, I mean, it does require authorized access, but I asked for access and they gave it to me for free.
Yeah. So the question comment was what's the difference here between E911 tracking and this LBS stuff? Well, LBS is available to any developer who wants to sign up for it. E911, you kind of have to be like in 911. I think that's the significant difference, is we're giving our location information in real time to anyone else who wants it, and I'm not cool with that. Anybody else? Cool. Well, thanks a lot for your time. Again, this is Goldie, Sanity Bit, Pierce, and I am a Smig. Have a great day.
Okay, thank you, guys. Breakout in 107.